Blog Talk Radio.
So now you can call in at 515-605-9366 and press the number 1, and then I can hear you. All right. Hey, Anthony, how are you? So thank you, Paul. The show is Real Talk. We've already had a few people call in. It started with Jeff Aroni calling in, talking about systemic racism and how he saw it and that he didn't believe it at first until he realized that as a white man, he probably would never see it because it wasn't anything that would affect him because of his skin complexion. Then we had John Beckman call in. John Beckman said that you know, he thought in the that it used to be racism, but he didn't see it anymore. He felt like it had changed. Then we had Janet Marie call in. She talked about COVID and the COVID shot and why she didn't believe in it. She didn't think that it cured anything. And then Kevin called in, and Kevin talked about just us just loving each other and everybody being the same. Then Rich's sister called in, and she talked about racism and COVID. The one thing that happened consistently with each of them is nobody called in to dispute or debate them, because that's not what this show is. This show is not a debate. The call-in number is 515-605-9376. Press the number 1. It should be right there. Hey, Gab. And really, it's promoting the idea of each of you being open enough to just have a conversation and not being afraid of the conversation that you're going to have, because you're not going to be judged. You're not going to be judged. No one is going to dispute you, debate you. No one is going to disagree with you. This is just you. Anthony Lloyd said, I'm enjoying the show and I'm watching and listening. I think it's a great platform you developed to speak out. Paul says, everyone is nervous about being out there. I know. That's the idea, is to break you from that fear, to give you the freedom to speak without worrying about whether anybody is going to judge you and talk to you, because it really isn't about the person speaking. It's really about you listening. Are you a good listener? How good of a listener are you? Do you really hear what other people think or say or think if they don't agree with you? Can you really hear? So I believe that, you know, the first few shows will be, as this one is today, very trepid. People will be a little nervous. Maybe it'll take a month or two before people really let their hair down. But more than speaking, listening. John Beckman said, it was very hard for me to call in and say what I said. I have stage fright and always had. I was taught my thoughts didn't matter. It's a shame, but true. lot of us have been taught that our thoughts don't matter, have been conditioned in the idea that what we think or say doesn't matter, and that if we do think or say something, that there's somebody around the corner like a sniper to shoot down what we think or what we feel because it's different, or because we don't have the right to think, because we've got these think tanks and we have to think inside these tanks, and I disagree with that. But that don't matter, because this show don't give a damn about whether I agree or disagree. This show only matters about one thing: what you have to say, and if I'm ready to listen. What you have to say, and if I'm ready to listen, to hear you, to really take in the things that you say, so I can inhale and think it through. No one wants to talk about, you know, the vaccine in public, whether they had it or not. No one wants to say whether they agree with the mandate or not. No one wants to say anything. Everybody is like, man, I don't really want to talk about this. What's amazing to me is how small the conversations are. I thought we'd have big conversations about history and you know, things that are happening right now today, and the concept of money. I thought people would really get into some really deep things, and maybe we will. Maybe it's just too early for us to get into it because we're still stepping on the ice pond, because, you know, we don't know if the ice is going to be thick enough. If it can hold us, because if it breaks through, you're going to break through to that cold water and you can freeze to death. So Gab says, one can't have a viable conversation without being able to listen to another person's view. Yelling accomplishes nothing but anger, a clash of the egos. It's good to listen. That's easy to say, but who determines what's a viable conversation? It's an open forum for anything, Gab. You can talk about anything you like. All you have to do is call in 515-605-9376, press the number 1, and you're off and running. John, you can't be misconstrued on this show, not from the host. Now there are people that are learning how to listen. They may misconstrue a lot of things because they don't know how to listen yet. This show isn't about misconstruing. It's not about judging. It's not about right or wrong. It's not about agree or disagree. This is just a show about listening. The concept and the exercise here is, if you're tuned into the show, to just listen. Not to say, oh, hell no, I definitely don't agree with you. That's not the – you're doing that. Oh, that's in my opinion. If you're doing that, you're not doing the show. You're not doing what the show asks you to do. How you doing, Gab?
Hey, Jay. How are you? Good evening, everybody. I wanted to veer off on another topic.
There is no other topic. Whatever you want to talk about.
Oh, okay. Well, I had read this book called The Guantanamo Bay Diaries, and they made a movie of it called The Mortician, which is playing on Showtime. And I'm bringing this up because, you know, I've traveled extensively. That was my career. And I used to wonder why everybody didn't like Americans. And, you know, I knew that we did things, our government did things, and you know, we're seeing that our government does things that are dirty and that we usually don't know about. Okay, this has to do with 9/11, and I really am recommending this movie because it's based on a true story. It's on Showtime now. And it shows where it was. It took place after 9/11 when they were gathering up all these people who they suspected were complicit in the planning or financing anything that had to do with 9/11. But they rounded up this guy, and he was from Mauritania, which is North Africa, west of Mali. It's on the coast, west coast. And he was totally innocent. And when you see what they did, you know, our government did, and how they tried to bring up all of these things and, you know, make up things. And, you know, we know now there's a lot of false truths out there, and it's ridiculous. But you understand, you begin to understand why people don't like us. But what I don't understand is why, as humans, we take something that one person does and you hate everybody from that one place, even though they had nothing to do with it. But, you know, we haven't gotten to that being the bigger part and saying it wasn't you, you know, that you can travel, you have free pass to travel as long as you respect and I respect, we should be good. But the things that they did, it took him 16 years to be free. And he had won his freedom. He won his habeas corpus. But when President Obama got in office, they still didn't free him for, I believe it was 9 more years. And he had to fight for that. And this man still doesn't even have his passport back. You know, you think about the things that our government does, and, you know, you don't, well, they keep us so insulated, or we're still so asleep rather than being more open and awakening, and I call it deconditioning, because we have been conditioned to believe that, you know, America the Great, and I'm not saying we're bad because I wouldn't want to live anywhere else, but we've done some dirt. I mean, some real dirt. And it made me sick to my stomach. You know, I had read the book, and I recommend that if you're a reader. It's called Guantanamo Diaries, and it tells you everything that they did to him. And then it's also co-signed by government records. And then the lengths we went to, just to keep this man behind bars so that we didn't have to say, oh, I'm sorry. And we never did. We got to be better. And we have to hold our government elected officials accountable for the things that they do. You know, because it reflects on us. When you want to travel, you want to hope that somebody is not just singling you out because you're an American. You know, yes, I'm an American, but I'm not in my country. I'm Gab, you know, and that one thing and that attitude that I had saved me in so many places that, I don't know, we just got to be better, start holding our officials and stop putting them up on these platforms where, you know, we think they're all so great. They're just regular people and they lie like everybody else does, but they're supposed to be better. So when you vote, don't just vote for party. Vote for character. And then don't just vote because, you know, they speak well or something. Really look at their records and see who they are, because they're representing us. And then when you want to go travel, you don't want somebody, you know, just singling you out, because it can happen. It has happened. So just engage with your government is what I'm trying to say. Every single election, appear. Make your voice heard. That's just me. But the movie, again, is called The Mauritanian, and it is on Showtime.
You got me. That's it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Valthene?
Yes.
How are you?
Hi, Yay. How are you?
I'm fine.
That's good. And hello to everyone that's on the board. I had some issues that I wanted to express.
Okay.
Today I saw a post, and it said that, I think they're called Memes. Maybe I'm not pronouncing that right, but M-E-M-E. And it said that I was raised that these colors was a promise from God, but not pride of living in sin. So I looked at it, and it had like that flag that the gay folks put out. And I didn't really understand that. I didn't agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
I also have an issue with the church, that if you don't attend or pay your tithes, that you're off the, I think it's called a roster. You know, they say you're going to, if you don't come every Sunday or every Wednesday night Bible study or something like that, that you would probably end up dying. Or
end up dying?
Yeah, out there in the world.
How will you end up dying? I'm sorry, go ahead, I'm sorry.
You know, like if you don't attend church, if they don't know where you are or something like that, or if you're not paying your tithes,
mm-hmm.
something's going to happen to you. I also have a problem with with the saints, church folks, that if you cuss or curse, that you're possessed.
Mm-hmm.
I also have an issue with if you don't have a sexual involvement, if you had a sexual involvement in your past, that you are labeled as low self-esteem, like being a part of prostitution or living in a different lifestyle that society doesn't agree with. I was trying to write these things down. A big one was if you don't like sex, that you're bumping pussy. You know, being a woman, if you don't like to have sex, that you like women. So these are just some things that, you know, people put out there. I don't agree with them, period. And when you get older, you know, and you get closer to, you know that you're going to leave this meat suit, you don't have time to think about all that stuff, but it still goes on. Depressing. It kind of like puts you in a fog or like, you know, what the hell is going on? Doesn't make sense. But it's real talk.
Well, I'm glad you... Is there anything else you want to tell me?
No.
Thank you for calling.
Mm-hmm.
Even right now, even as we speak, and if there's ever. Hey, Information Man, if there's ever anything that really is on my mind most times, it's the debt that's owed to Americans of African descent for the crimes that were committed against us. See, I really want America to be great for once. But America can never be great until she pays the debt she owes for the crimes she committed. If she doesn't, she will perish. This country as we know it, as we see it today, won't exist. Those are the things that's in my mind. Real talk. if black folk don't learn how to be investors and speculators in the stock market and cryptocurrency in their own communities, they will be at zero wealth by 2053. There's no way around it. Black people have to stop lying to each other and talking about how much we love each other and how much compassion we have. We have to be honest enough to say we are a threat to ourselves. We have a hard time loving each other because we have a hard time loving ourselves. That's real talk. That's the kind of stuff that's in my head. Those are the thoughts that I fight through every day. How do I get better? How do I get better? How do we get better? That's real talk. Before we get out of here, I'm going to tell you guys a story. It's about George Junius Stinney Jr. Now, the reason why you may have heard his name is because of the crime that was committed against him by this country. And if you don't know his name, when you hear what I'm about to tell you, you will be flabbergasted. And the only reason why I'm telling you this story is because you all aren't calling in to do some real talk, so I'm going to give you some real talk. These are the things that I do when I'm alone. This is the kind of information I read and as it relates to history, because I just enjoy history, because I try to use history to gauge where I am in my life, in the world, in my thought process, because nothing that we're doing today is new. There's nothing new under this sun. But George Junius Stinney Jr. was born October 21st, 1929. He was an African-American boy who at the age of 14 was wrongfully convicted in a proceeding that was later vacated as an unfair trial in 2014. He was accused of murdering two white girls, Betty Jean Binnaker, who was 11, and Mary Emma Thames, who was 7, in his hometown of Alcolu, South Carolina. He was executed by electric chair in 1944, which made him the youngest American with an exact birth date confirmed to be sentenced to death and executed in the 20th century. So, on March 23rd, 1944, the bodies of two young girls, Betty June Binnaker and Mary Emma Thames, were discovered in Alcolu, South Carolina. The girls had gone missing the day before if they never returned home the previous night. Binnaker and Thames both suffered severe blunt force trauma, resulting in penetration of both of the girls' skulls. In 1944, George Stinney lived in Alcolu, South Carolina with his father, George Stinney Sr., and his mother, Amy, his brother John, who was 17, and Charles, who was 12, and his sisters, Catherine, who was 10, and Amy, who was 7. Stinney's father worked at the town sawmill, and the family resided in company housing. Alcolu was a small working-class mill town where white and black neighborhoods were separated by railroad tracks. The town was typical of small southern towns of the time, given segregated schools and churches for white and black residents, there was limited interaction between them. The bodies of Betty June Binnaker and Mary Emma Thames were found in a ditch on March 23, 1944, after failing to return home the night before. the bodies were discovered on the African-American side of Alcoa. Stinney's father helped in the search. The girls had been beaten with a weapon, variously reported as a piece of a blunt steel or a railroad spike. The girls were last seen riding their bicycles looking for flowers. They passed the Stinney's property. They had asked Stinney and his sister Amy if they knew where to find maypops, a local name for passion flowers. According to Amy, she was with Stinney at the time the police later established for the murders. According to an article reported by the wire service on March 24, 1944, and published widely with the mistake of the boy's name preserved, the sheriff announced the arrest of George Junius and stated that the boy had confessed and led officers to a hidden piece of iron. Both girls had suffered blunt force trauma to the face and head. Reports differed as to what kind of weapon had been used. According to a report by the medical examiner, these wounds had been inflicted by a blunt instrument with a round head, about the size of a hammer. Both girls' skulls were punctured. The medical examiner reported no evidence of sexual assault to the younger girl, though the genitalia of the older girl was slightly bruised. Both girls' hymens remained intact at the time of the autopsy. George Stinney Jr. and his older brother John were arrested on suspicion of murdering the girls. John was released by police, but George was held in custody. He was not allowed to see his parents until after his trial and conviction. According to a handwritten statement, Stinney's arresting officer was H.S. Newman, a Clarendon County deputy, who stated, "I arrested a boy by the name of George Stinney. He then made a confession and told me where to find a piece of iron about 15 inches where he said he put it in a ditch about 6 feet from the bicycle." No confession statement signed by Stinney is known to exist. The 14-year-old later claimed that the arresting officer starved him and then bribed him with food to confess. Stinney was reported to have gotten into fights at school, including a fight where he scratched a girl with a knife. This assertion by Stinney's seventh-grade teacher, who was African-American, was disputed by Amy Stinney Ruffner when it was reported in 1995. A local white woman who remembered Stinney from childhood claimed in 2014 that he had threatened to kill her and a friend the day before the murder and that he was known as a bully. Following Stinney's arrest, his father was fired from his job at the local sawmill, and the Stinney family had to immediately vacate their company housing. The family feared for their safety. Stinney's parents did not see him again before the trial. He had no support during his 81-day confinement and trial. He was detained at a jail in Columbia, 50 miles from Alcoa, due to the risk of lynching. Stinney was questioned alone without his parents or an attorney. Although the Sixth Amendment guarantees legal counsel, this was not routinely observed during the United States Supreme Court's 1963 ruling in Gideon v. Wainwright that explicitly required representation through the course of criminal proceedings. The entire proceeding against Stinney included jury selection took one day. Stinney's court-appointed counsel was Charles Plowden, the Texas commissioner, campaigning for re-election to local office. Plowden did not challenge the three police officers who testified that Stinney confessed to the murders. He also did not challenge the prosecution's presentation of two differing versions of Stinney's verbal confession. In one version, Stinney was attacked by the girls after he tried to get one girl who had fallen in the ditch, and he killed them in self-defense. In another version, he had followed the girls, first attacking Mary Emma and then Betty June. There was no written record of Stinney's confession apart from the deputy, apart from Deputy Newman's statement. Other than the testimony of these police officers, at trial, prosecutors called three witnesses, Reverend Francis Batson, who discovered the bodies of the two girls, and the two doctors who performed a post-mortem examination. The court allowed discussion of possibility of rape due to bruising or Binnicker's genitalia. Stinney's counsel did not call any witnesses, did not cross-examine witnesses, and offered little or no defense. The trial presentation lasted 2.5 hours. More than 1,000 whites crowded the courtroom, but no blacks were allowed. As was typical in the time, Stinney was tried before an all-white jury. In 1944, most African Americans in the South were prohibited from voting, therefore ineligible to serve on juries. After deliberating for fewer than 10 minutes, the jury found Stinney guilty of both murders. Judge Philip H. Stoll sentenced Stinney to death by electrocution. There's no transcript of the trial. No appeal was filed by Stinney's counsel. Stinney's family churches and NAACP appealed to Governor Olin D. Johnston for clemency, given the age of the boy. Others urged the governor to let the execution proceed, which he did. Johnston wrote a response to one appeal for clemency, but the autopsy proved the allegation therein to be false. It may be interesting for you to know that Stinney killed the smaller girl to rape the larger one, then killed the larger girl and raped her dead body. 20 minutes later, he returned and attempted to rape her again, but her body was too cold. All of this he admitted himself. Between the time of Stinney's arrest and his execution, his parents were allowed to see him once after the trial when he was held in the Columbia Penitentiary. Under the threat of lynching, they were not allowed to see him any other time. Stinney was executed on June 16, 1944, at 7:30 p.m. He was prepared for execution by electric chair, using a Bible as a booster seat because Stinney was too small for the chair. He was then restrained by his arms, legs, and body to the chair. His father was only allowed to approach the electric chair to say his final words to his son, and an officer asked George if he had any last words to say before his execution took place, but he only shook his head. The executioner pulled a strap from the chair and placed it over George's mouth, causing him to break into tears, and then he placed a face mask over his face, which did not fit him as he continued sobbing. When the lethal electricity was applied, the mask covering slipped off, revealing tears streaming down Stinney's face. He was buried in an unmarked grave in Crawley. This is the America we know. This is the America that we've always known. And until we are allowed, or until we allow ourselves to have some real talk, to really express what's really inside of us, how we really feel, we won't be free because we're too afraid to face ourselves. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll do the show again. And again, you know, if you guys want to, if you have any opinions of the show that you would like to express, email me at jayking62@gmail.com, jking62@gmail.com. Tell me what you think. We'll talk how we can make it better, what we can do to increase it. And thank you all for tuning in and listening to Real Talk. We don't talk.